This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling-Biru. Hey everyone, thanks for joining me. Can you believe that the last season of Succession is upon us? I'm overwhelmed with excitement and dread, both because our time with the Roys and their crew will soon be over, and in anticipation of how they're going to end this brilliant Shakespearean saga. Now, I've been wanting to talk to Justine Loop for many seasons now. Her character of Willa is, for me, one of the most fascinating and mysterious characters on the show, and Justine Loop plays her with such strength. At the beginning of Succession, Willa was really put through the ringer by the Roy family, sneered at for her background as an escort and playwright. But slowly and with quiet dignity, Willa has become part of the Roy family inner circle. And now Connor and Willa are newly engaged, and Connor making a run for president. Can't wait to dive into that relationship with Justine in our conversation. Loop studied at Juilliard and has worked with the likes of Noah Baumbach, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Besides Succession, you've seen her in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. She worked with Brendan Gleeson for 3 years on Mr. Mercedes. At one point, she was filming 3 TV shows at once. We talked just a few days after Justine and the whole Succession crew had a fabulous premiere party in New York. A bittersweet evening, a fantastic celebration for the upcoming last season, but also an emotional goodbye to the Succession era.
Why does everyone ask how I'm feeling? I got done a huge deal. I got the election. I got Etienne. I got plenty on my plate.
He's on the floor, Tom.
Explain me what he's doing.
He's moseying, terrifyingly moseying. It's like if Santa Claus was a hitman.
We were cut out behind our backs. But there's a shape for things for us.
We partner up with Sandy and Stewie, with Pierce.
Death wrestling ogres.
Excited to get into this knife fight?
Let's blow it up.
I'm not authorized to let you take off.
It's that. You know, in Buddhism, sometimes your greatest tormentor can also be your most perceptive teacher.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Buddha, nice Tom Fords.
There's a night of the long knives coming. I need a fire breather. Your help with maths.
You really want me?
I need you.
Mr. Mencken, my most unworthy opponent.
Still clinging to your slice of pie.
What are you at now?
1%.
The fear is it could get squeezed.
Squeezed down? From 1? Because that's the lowest number.
Justine Loop, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Congratulations on the reviews coming in. It's near the end, and the only thing that's giving me some pause in the depression that you're ending is seeing all the photos and videos from last Tuesday when you guys seem to have such a blast on the dance floor with dancing to Carly Rae Jepsen. You guys are just a real family. How was that?
I know, it was so fun. It's so funny. My brother sent me a tweet that he saw that said something about like Justine Loop, like dancing to Call Me Maybe. Like it's the best song she's ever she's ever heard. It was like too good. Yeah, no, it was amazing. I'm so glad that we had that night together. We all love each other so much, and yeah, I think you know it was just a. It was such a nice opportunity to like have this kind of cathartic ceremonial type of like, we love each other experience. I'm really glad it turned into a dance party because it was not, you know, set up to be a dance party, but a few of us just started going for it. And I'm glad that everybody joined in. And it was so cool to see Jesse Armstrong in the middle of it all and Brian join in. And I think that those videos really capture how much we care about each other, and it was kind of this bittersweet ceremonial kind of.
Oh, it must be. Yeah, I mean, you're such a family. Who lets loose the most and in a thing like that?
Not to, I think Sarah and I think that night I said to her as we started dancing, I was like, I can't believe this is maybe one of the last times we're going to dance together. Because at any party, if I find Sarah, we both love dancing so, so much that if I find her and no one else is dancing, she'll be the one who starts it with me. And so she's an incredible dancer, and she really lets loose, and she has so much fun. And so dancing with her over the years has been a real joy. Oh, and I think that she probably lets loose the most. Yeah.
Talking about the women on Succession, they are so unique. I mean, Jerry, Shiv, Willa, I mean, the siblings' mother, Lady Caroline. What stands out for you the most of how the women are written on Succession?
Oh man, I feel like they're written with the ferocity that maybe on other shows people shy away from, you know? I think that's the main quality that I'm like, wow, you just don't see these women. They all are just, they're right up there in terms of their intensity and their drive and their power, in a kind of severe way. They don't shy away. They're not these kind of, they're not afraid to have women who are like very centered in their masculine. Do you know what I mean? I feel like all of us have that quality. Even Willa, who's like, you know, whole entrance into this family was as a sex worker and an escort and kind of like a girlfriend to one of these men. That was like her whole role, was being the best date ever to one of the family members. You just feel her sense of kind of poise and agency, and that she's just as fiery as anyone else, you know, from the very beginning with that moment with Tom, where she says like, yeah, well, at least I'm only getting fucked by one member of this family. Yeah. Like, she's not afraid to hold her ground and like get right in there. And I feel like all of the women on the show, you know, Natalie Gold, same thing. Zoe Winters this season with her incredible development as, you know, Carrie, like, it's just Jess, they're all really strong women. So it's cool to, it's cool. It's I think it's kind of unique that we've got that.
It is. I always think about that because you talk a lot about the toxic masculinity on the show, but the women are so well-written, well-rounded, and can be just as evil and just as mysterious as anyone else. I think that's been a fascinating ride on this series.
Totally. Yeah, there's nothing, there's no shyness. There's no kind of like, we have to posture these women in a certain way because they're women. It's like, no, we are just as, they belong to this cutthroat world. And yeah, they can be just as horrible as the men, for sure.
People talk about Succession a lot. They say, oh, there's no one to root for. These are fundamentally flawed people. And I must be fundamentally flawed because I root for Willa and Connor. I root for Roman. And why do you think we still do that? At least some of us.
Oh, no. I mean, everyone who's watching it, we all can agree that they're all fundamentally flawed. And also we are rooting for them and we have empathy for them and we see some dimension to all of them. And they're delicious in their horribleness, you know, like all of them have these wildly colorful qualities that you kind of, you hitch your ride to just because it's such a joy to watch. And also I feel like you kind of understand, Jesse does a really good job of seeing flickers of their pain and the things that they've gone through and the way that they've become the people that they are. I mean, I feel like I'm constantly going between being like, oh, that person's horrible. And, oh, I kind of feel for that guy. Like Roman last season, it's like one moment I'd be like, he's such a fucking prick. He's such a dick, you know. And then the next moment I'd be like, oh, I feel for him. I see like this kind of child that standing there dealing with his dad. And
his dad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like as much as people say they're all vicious, which they are, there's no getting around it. They're horrible to each other. You also kind of see, you see the whole package, you see the whole, all the dimensions, and it makes it easy to take the ride. Along with that, even the fact that they're toxic, even their toxicity is kind of delicious, you know.
One of the many genius of the writing of Succession is that you get just enough backstory. There's mystery to everyone. Like, who was Tom before? You see traces of abuse, like you were saying with Roman, but you don't really know what happens. And with Willa, we know the sex worker part. We know that she takes no bullshit, but can also be so protective. Have you made sort of your own backstory for her where you know why she reacts like this?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of, that's so funny you say that, because I really agree. There's a whole lot of mystery with Willa. And because there's so much that's not written, and there's a lot of like space between each of the moments with Connor and Willa, and a lot that's unsaid about how she feels, I kind of had to make some decisions about what I wanted to be going on with her. You know, how does she feel about him? Because it's a lot of there's a lot beneath the surface in every moment between Connor and Willa. There's a lot that's not said. It's like pretty minimal. So I just wanted to say, like, I wanted to figure out for myself, well, what's going on here? Because there's no way that it can be I have to fill it with something underneath the words. Like, there has to be something going on. And so I think sometime, at the end of the beginning of last season, there was a moment where Logan was figuring out what all the kids' duties were, and Willa's like, well, what about Con? And from that point on, I was like, okay, so now I kind of understand. This woman is stepping into a position of like, yeah, you've created a life for me. You've given me all this money. You've kind of like been the supporter for me, but I also have like a lot of agency in terms of like who I am and my strength. And I'm going to step in here and I'm going to be a little bit of a mama bear with you. Like, I'm going to protect, like, you see her kind of step into the position of being a protector, and that she has affection for Con, and she sees very clearly what's going on in this family and the dynamics between everyone. You know, she's been on the fly on the wall for the first couple of seasons, and so she has a really clear idea of like this man's history with this family. And I felt like, okay, so this, in every moment of this that I can, I'm going to be like, you know, I'm gonna step into being his protector a little bit and even out their relationship a little bit. So you see that it is transactional, but it's also like there's some intimacy in the transactions, and you see her kind of rising into a new position in that relationship.
Signorina, per favore, questa macchina?
No, it's the other one. It's coming for you. You okay, Con?
Yeah. Just a little tired. Sorry about the tossing and turning. I just couldn't get the AC right, you know?
The AC, yeah. Sure.
Plus, my family hates me. I'm going to lose ATN to a goddamn Swede, so my campaign is fucked, and you're going to leave me. And I love you. So, yeah. Yeah, that and the AC. Come on.
Con.
What?
You're a nice man.
Right. Thanks.
You know what? Fuck it.
Fuck it.
Fuck it.
As in?
Fuck it. Come on, how bad can it be? Right? Yeah, why not? You know, we'll have fun. Fuck it, right?
Hell yeah. Fuck it.
Mr. Roy, that's your car.
Ah, grazie mille. Fuck it, huh?
Fuck it! Fuck it forever!
The thing that was really cool about it is that it started becoming more and more evident in the writing, like the birthday episode, that's a huge part of it. And once that was on the table, it really like helped kind of fill out their relationship a little bit more.
You do that so well. I mean, I've always gotten the feeling as you've progressed with her that she gets protective, because in her past life, she's seen things that makes her not like to see people get humiliated. Maybe she's been humiliated, maybe others have been, but she's really sort of steps in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she was a party girl turned escort. So in my imagination, she, you know, was someone who was like starting out with an artistic career in New York, young, really ambitious in terms of like what she wanted out of her career. And so she was like, well, I need to provide for myself while I'm doing this, because this is a tough one. So I'm going to start dating, you know, these guys for money. So I think you're right on to something, that she probably has dealt with some humiliation. Even in this family, in the first two seasons, she's 100% the black sheep. She's constantly called out for being a prostitute. She's constantly, you know, pushed out of the family because of her career and not wanting the family to look bad, she's not allowed to be in pictures with them. So I think she's, and she handles it all well. She has like such a good deal of resilience in terms of all of that. Like you never really see her kind of wobble or be, you never see the humiliation hit her aside from when she gets a bad review, you know? Yeah. So I feel like, yeah, I think that she can name, that person's being shamed or that person's being humiliated and I'm going to step in here. And it's also my partner. So I mean, that's not going to be tolerated. Sorry. Like, yeah.
She has such a quiet dignity about her. And I mean, she really moved from, as you were saying, from being Marcia, really just rubbing in her past to life as an escort, to now being sort of part of the clan, just accepted. She's just always there.
Yeah. Yeah. She really hung tough. Through all of that,
you can feel that they probably have a respect for her that she did. I mean, that she's not afraid of them either.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. Like the Roman has come out her a handful of times, and you kind of just feel her let it roll right off of her back, which I think has given her, you know, a position in this family. Like she's kind of paid her dues, and she's around, and she still deals with their shit, but you can tell that she's kind of like unfazed.
Do you feel that Connor really loves her?
Yeah. Yeah. I do. I think she loves him too. I mean, he's got his own, Connor's on a different wavelength, clearly. And so I think it's his version of love. And I almost think it's the first time that he's really like experienced this kind of a thing, you know? So yeah, I think he does love her. I think they're very endeared to each other. And I think that they become companions in a real, supportive way, strangely, over this time. And I think that they both know how much the other person means in terms of their life and what they want their life to be. And so, yeah, I think that is it a perfect love? Is it the kind of love that I would necessarily want? Probably not.
But probably not with none of the Roys.
I know, right? It's like, it is one of those things where if you imagine being in that life, it's just so stressful. It's just like, it riddles me with anxiety watching it. And then to imagine being part of the kind of the stakes that they're constantly in and the turmoil that they're constantly in and the feuds, it's just like, ooh, no thanks.
Yeah, there's always like two things they're thinking about, like the proposal. He starts beautifully, will you make me the happiest man alive, basically, and then slash a bulletproof candidate. I mean,
totally. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is none of it is clean. Like Will is, you know, simultaneously like saying yes and I'll be your partner, and also she's using his money for her play, and he's saying yes, I want to be your partner, and simultaneously you'd make really good arm candy on my presidential campaign. Like it's kind of all on the table though. Mm-hmm. Which is
true.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, she knows what she's getting.
Yeah, and he does too. It's all quite transparent. I mean, there's some levels of like, what is this? And, you know, how much do you feel? How much do you not feel? There's some vagueness to it, but also there's a lot of like honesty about what's going on here, you know?
I think they could actually make it. The only thing that worries me is if it turns out that she's just writing a play about them.
Wouldn't that be amazing if this whole thing was just Will's play?
It would. I mean, that'd be a great turn too.
But that's really far out. That's real meta. But you're saying that the whole time she's just been writing a play about the family, and so it destroyed.
Yeah. I mean, she has a first row seat to the most powerful family.
Funny, there's, I was thinking the same thing last year. I was like sitting there and she was like, there was at the beginning of the first episode of last season, she had her a book, a notebook that Props gave me that she was like sitting and kind of like writing in. And meanwhile, there's like all this chaos going on around her. They're like changing planes and getting to the airport. And there's like all this kind of, and I was like, is she writing about this? I thought the same thing, same with the Republican convention where she's sitting on her phone through the whole event, just typing away and like looking around, you know, going like, what's happening here, you know, with all these eccentric kind of, so I've had the same thought throughout this. I'm like, is she writing about this? What's going on? But I guess you'll just have to wait and
see. Yeah. But what is their power, the position that they have, Will and Connor, going into season four now?
Well, I mean, I feel like their position is they just got engaged. So now they're kind of like, you know, they're, she's officially part of the Roy family in some capacity, like a more formal capacity. We know that he's making a run for it. We don't know how successfully it's going. I'd say that we're pretty low on the totem pole in terms of our status in this family. I think anyone could agree based on the last three seasons. They're kind of like, you know, the little like dawdlers at the back of the line.
Well, maybe they need a romantic wedding for publicity.
I know. Maybe they need a romantic wedding. I don't know. You'll see.
You've worked with some incredible shows and showrunners. I mean, you've worked with David E. Kelly, Amy Sherman-Palladino, Noah Baumbach. But talk about what the Brits, what the sensibility is that they bring.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
To the perspective that they bring to Succession.
I mean, I just love the Brits. I feel like they're incredibly... Their sense of humor is my favorite. You know, I love like a dry sense of humor. I guess that there is some level of repression that they're all self-admittedly like, you know, they all kind of characterize themselves as like an incredibly repressed culture. So there's something about them putting all of this steam into the show that's like this like fiery, unbridled, like just like shit show that I imagine that maybe they get their kicks out through their writing a little bit, you know, that there's some sort of catharsis in writing about these like terrible people that are so different from the people that they are, who are like kind of like, they're all like very like kind and like mild mannered and like sweethearts. And then you see them writing these characters that are just like atrociously terrible to each other. I've always loved a British sensibility comedically. And I also think that there's something British, and this might just be like a generalization, but there's something British about like getting out while it's still really good. You know what I mean? Like, they don't really, I feel like The Office did a really good job of that as well. I think they know when to call it and they know how to tell a story, and they don't just like keep on pushing it just for the sake of creating more content. And I don't know if that's necessarily Brits or if it's Jesse in particular and his team, but yeah, I think the quality of work is just like amazing and I love them all. And I don't know what exactly is them being British and what's them being amazing people. But yeah, I love all of them and I'm sad to leave them.
I've talked to a few of your fellow actors and colleagues. I mean, it seems like a very special on-set environment, basically like a play. You have cameras on you on the time and really long takes. So no one knows who the camera is on when they're speaking and you're reacting. You don't know when the camera's actually on you. Talk a little bit about that and what's that like for an actor?
Oh, it's so dreamy. It just like keeps you constantly involved and engaged. And honestly, if you look back and watch, most of my part is just reaction shots. You know, like Will, I feel like that it's been a blessing for me in particular, because a lot of what Willa does is just sit and watch this family and like respond to like everything she's seeing. So it's also been cool to feel like, oh, okay, I have a part in this, even when I'm not speaking, you know?
You have the best reactions.
That's so nice. You're Thank us. You. Just like, what the? So I have a lot of fun, especially honestly, it's so perfect that I'm also paired with Connor, who's like the most outlandish, that it's watching my partner just like drive himself into a fire or something like that. It's just like the most bizarre. But yeah, no, I mean, it's just been a joy. It's like, they feel like members of the cast, the camera ops, they feel like they're another character in the scene. And if you watch it back, you see that like they know how they land a lot of the jokes. Like they're listening so intently that they'll hear something that someone improvises or someone says, and they'll just like know exactly where to turn to land it. And so it like makes a lot of it work. Like just seeing their artistry, you feel that they add a whole new element of expression to the show. And there's some stuff in this last season that they did incredibly long takes for, incredibly long. Like they didn't stop the whole time. And I remember watching it, and I was off camera, and I was watching them kind of roll in and film, and then they like run out of film because they're also doing it on film, which is a yeah. whole nother thing. It's like incredible. They're working these machines, and it's like, so they would finish their film, and then they'd pull back, and another camera op would pull in while they're changing out their film. And it felt like this incredible dance. And I started crying in the on set in the middle of the scene, just watching it. It was so moving, and you really feel their importance on this set. So aside from it just being a real treat as an actor to feel like, okay, I'm constantly in this, I'm constantly engaged in this scene. And it really does make it feel like you can do anything, you can move anywhere. There's like a certain level of spontaneity that it allows. So it's just such a treat as an actor, but then also just for the finished product, you really feel like, oh man, this takes the show to another level, having these camera ops and our DP on this team.
And I know that you guys have worked a lot with different consultants. Among that, consultants, sort of wealthy people, that wealthy people don't need coats because they just run from their car and in and things like that. We've learned from reading about Succession and talking to people. What has surprised you about sort of the habits of the very, very, very uber rich?
There's one scene where Shiv goes from like traveling in it across like cross countries traveling, and she walks out of her car and she's carrying nothing but her purse. And I was like, where is her luggage? And then you're like, oh, right. She doesn't do that. She doesn't do that. Like, she doesn't need luggage. So that was shocking. The private jet, everybody kept on saying PJ, PJ, PJ. I was like, what the heck is PJ? Why are we referencing PJ all the time? And then I was like, oh, private jet. Oh, that's
not the
what
pajamas.
We're no. Getting into our PJ. I was like, what is a PJ? Pajamas? Yeah. And then it was like, oh no, we're talking about their private jet that they fly everywhere in. Yeah, there's like all these little things that kind of you flag as like so different than anything that I've ever, you know, experienced as a layman in this world. But on top of that, just like, you know, I've been exposed to some of the most beautiful places in the world and gotten to kind of live the life of someone who could afford to do that. Not to the extent that this family does, but, you know, go to these incredible places, work on a yacht where you're like jumping off the boat at the end of the day and swimming, like, it's insane. And I'm constantly having to remind myself that this is probably the mountaintop in terms of this like, type of luxury while shooting.
I've heard about you from colleagues and from us that you're really, really a great scene partner. And I understand that your first scene partner was your brother.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I feel like he would barely call it scene partner. I would like basically just film things and throw him into the shot and be like, okay, now's your turn to do that thing. But he honestly, most of his job when we were younger, most of his jobs revolved around being the camera op. So I would basically like be like, okay, we're going to make a movie now and you're going to shoot it. And what's funny is he's now a DP and a camera op actress. So We really had something going. Yeah.
But I mean, this was a passion for you from early age, and you've worked, as I mentioned, with some of the best, and among others, you've been directed by Philip Seymour Hoffman. What did he teach you? What was that like?
Phil taught me, it's an interesting question. Phil taught me a lot about work ethic, how to be relentless within your job, not to stop working in terms of discovering more. And he was incredible. Honestly, he also taught me a lot about like relating the work to your life. We did like a full month of table work before we started rehearsing the play, where we just sat there with the script and went over every single page of the piece and basically like pulled it apart, and everyone would talk about like their relation to the scene or a memory that they had that reminded them, that they were reminded of while they were reading the scene, or a relationship they had that felt familiar while they were reading the play. And that was amazing. And as he was going through the process, I would just watch him and listen to him talk about the way that he was finding his way through the play. And you just felt how he's just such a giant of a person. He had such an emotional connection to life. You just felt his sensitivity. You felt how much he cared. You felt his passion. You felt his fire. And it also, honestly, I also, in full transparency, I just felt how much pain he was in as well as an artist. And I think it also taught me about boundaries that I have within myself in terms of how much I want to give to a process and the pain that sometimes comes with the process. And so it happened when I was 23 or 20, I was in my early 20s, and walking away from that play, I also, on top of everything that I learned about the work, I also learned about where I'd want to draw the line with the work and my happiness and what I want to be like as a person outside of the work. And I'm sure that Phil had his ebbs and flows with the job in terms of how he, you know, felt about it and approached it. And there are times that I'm sure he was incredibly joyful around what he was working on. But I also just felt like that, you know, he felt very like he was in a lot of pain. And I think a lot of that was due to his connection and his devotion to the parts that he was playing. And I just kind of, I walked away going, okay, like that was also a lesson for me, you know.
Internalizing of the pain.
Yeah. And that I just need to be able to like put as much effort as I can into it and care as much as I can, and also prioritize my mental health, which is, I think, something that not a lot of people talk about in this profession. We don't really talk about the actor's mental health. And there's kind of a romanticizing around method and putting yourself into these parts and really like going there in some of these really, really dark experiences the characters are having. And I feel like there's very little awareness of how to, or there's not much goes into addressing how to take care of yourself and your mental health in these kinds of jobs. And that's also important if you want to live a long life and have a lot of longevity in this career.
Undoubtedly, my thought goes to Jeremy Strong, because you met him around this time of the play with Philip Seymour mm-hmm. Hoffman, I understand. And he, from what we have learned, has gone the other direction. I mean, he seems very method. Do you worry about him, or can he take it in a different way?
I don't worry about Jeremy. I don't. I think he's okay. You know, I think everybody has their own opinions about Jeremy and his work ethic, or you know, his process and how it affects the work and how it affects his relationships on the show. And I kind of feel like, you know, you see what he's doing. It's an incredible character. Kendall Roy is like, it's remarkable what he's done. And I actually like, I don't, you know, I've heard Brian be like, oh, he's tortured and I worry about Jeremy. And for some reason, I don't look at Jeremy and worry about if he's okay or not. You know, I'm sure that he could do it without all that. I'm sure. He's so skilled and talented that I'm like, I think you don't need to do all this. But it's also like different strokes for different folks. And like, if he needs to do that, then he needs to do that. And he's doing such an incredible job that it's like, you know, this is just my feeling about it and what I need to do for myself. And he's dealing with some really heavy stuff, so I couldn't do that. I know I couldn't.
And I don't know Jeremy, but he seems to have a good family and he lives in Denmark. I mean, he seems to be working both sides very well, so I'm not worried about him either without knowing anything.
His wife is one of the most delightful humans I've ever met. She's like remarkably cool and kind. And I've even said to her, I'm like, whoa, you really, how do you do this? Like, how, you know, he's so committed. I think he's like self-admittedly, like, you know, he's like one hot, he's in the job when he's in the job, and they have children, and she's just like a really incredible, supportive partner and a really cool woman. I really like her. And she's got her own thing going on too. She's working on a lot of projects as well. So Emma's great.
They'll be fine.
Shout out to Emma.
So like Rupert Murdoch, he's 92. He's getting married for the fifth time. Trump has his legal things. I mean, the Uber billionaires are still going strong. The end of Succession, what is sort of the meaning of it? What does it say about our world for you?
Oh, man, it's so funny because I have a really strong answer, but it's very much tied to something that happens this season. I will say that I think that Jesse does a really good job of summing up like what this series is about. And when I saw it on the page, I started crying because I was just like, this is it. This is what he's trying to say. And I hope everybody walks away feeling the same thing, but it's a really,
he would nail it.
Yeah, he nailed it. And I don't want to give too much away, but I just feel like he says it so eloquently and it comes out in just the right way. And I feel like after watching this season, I have a very, very strong idea of what he was trying to do with this show and what he was trying to say about this part of our culture.
What about for you personally that it's ending?
Terrible. It's terrible. I mean, I've said this before, but like we've been working on it for 6 years. I started the show when I was 27 years old. I'm 33. That's like a massive, you know, as a woman, it's like a totally, I feel like I went from being like a girl, relatively like a girl, into like a woman. And it's a huge arc in my life, this show, and the relationships on it have kind of fostered all the growth that's happened in those 6 years. I feel really close to everybody, some more than others. I mean, there's several women on this show that are now, I would call them like some of my best friends. So personally, it's really, really hard to say goodbye, you know. Artistically, like I trust Jesse Armstrong so intrinsically. He's got his finger on the pulse of the show so strongly. He knows what it is, and he's never led us astray so far. That I really do feel like it was the right choice, you know. Like, yeah. Not that even matters, but I read it and I'm like, I've seen what we've done, I've seen what he wrote and the writers, and I really trust him, and it feels like the best version of this story. I mean, it feels really solid. So as heartbreaking as it is personally and artistically, because, you know, who can be on a show like, how many times can you be on a show like this in your life? I don't think that they come, you know, it's few and far between these opportunities. So of course it's also like, you know, sad to say goodbye to this quality of material, but the relationships and showing up and having them there all the time, it's going to be tough.
Are you satisfied with Willa's arc? What happens for her?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Is it?
Yeah, it's perfect. Good. Yeah.
What's next for you?
I'm working on a job now, but I'm not allowed to say what it is. Everything's so secretive now.
Yes, everything's so secret. Everyone.
It's kind of funny. It's like, okay, nobody really cares. So it's weird that we're making it into this really big secret. But yeah, I'm working on something now. Yeah, I know. But it's like, so it's like weird that it's like a level of like secrecy around the whole thing. But yeah, I'm excited about it. I think it will be a good show. It's a show. I think it will be really good. I'm having fun doing it. And I think it's a nice new chapter. It's a lot more, it's a light vibe and a different kind of a part for me. So I'm really excited to see where that goes. And I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Okay, last question. Favorite scene from the three seasons we've seen? Either you were in it or you weren't.
Oh my God, there's so many good ones. I mean, I love Oh man, I feel like I can I do a few? Can I do a
Yes,
few?
please.
Okay. I mean, I'm just gonna do them from the last season because I just rewatched that season. I love when Tom finds out he's off the hook and not going to jail and throws the desk. I mean, anything Matthew McFadden does, the whole thing about like Logan's never gotten fucked, so I'm gonna stick with Logan. That whole scene outside the diner is amazing. The scene between Brian and Jeremy in the last part of last season where they had the dinner in
Oh, well,
Italy
Logan
together.
makes his son eat the try the mozzarella. Oh.
Where, yeah, where he calls in Kendall's son and says, like, eat this. It's just amazing. The You Are My Onion scene with Harriet and Shiv is incredible. And then I would say the scene between Shiv and Tom where they're role playing, and her way of role playing is to say, I don't love you. I don't love you, but you keep on wanting me, and even though you know I don't love you. And like that scene hits so hard every time I've seen it. It's just so intense. But my God, there's so many. Oh, the Roman dick pic scene is amazing. It's some of the best, like, not there's no speaking to him in that entire scene where he's like knows that his dad has just figured out that he sent this dick pic to Jerry. And he doesn't say a word, but you see everything. You see everything. It's just so, I mean, that's the thing about the show, though. I mean, like, that's just the last two episodes I'm talking about. Scene after scene that are just like the best scene. You
Yeah,
know,
and
like
when we
this is
got to see Connor with the bread knife really in Italy there really assert himself and finally just sort of say, I am the oldest brother. Never forget that. That was
no, and that's
powerful.
I know. I will say also, you know, Alan, I just want to go on the record. Alan is a genius. Alan's a genius. I read the things that he writes at times, or I mean the things that are written for him, and he's so easily delivers these far out lines that no one notices. Like, I mean, people notice, but like it's so easy for him to say these things that you don't even notice how far out they are, that like no one else could deliver the things that Connor says, like in the way that he does. Alan is a comic genius. So like any scene that Alan is in, I just am like, I'm floored. I think he's incredible. I think he's not only just the best scene partner, but I love watching him and I'm excited for him this season. And I feel like it's like on the record now with all these reviews that he's like getting his
Yes.
moment in the sun. And to me, he's always been in the sun. I mean, he's just an incredible, incredible guy and just a fantastic actor. But I'm excited that he's gotten this much real estate this season. And I'm gonna miss him so much.
The two of you together are just magic. So we're gonna miss you guys too, just as viewers.
Thank
Thank you
you.
so much, Justine. This is amazing, and thank you for this show. And I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you. I'm excited too, and I hope you enjoy it. And thanks again for asking to talk. This was great.
Thank you so much to Justine Loop for joining me. The last season of Succession premieres on HBO this Sunday. And thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe to Pop Culture Confidential wherever you get your podcasts. Pop Culture Confidential is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. See you next time.
You've watched them in unforgettable adventures, love affairs, and tragedies. Now it's time to hear their own remarkable stories. From the makers of Death of a Rockstar and Death of a Sports Star, this is Death
Ready.
of a Film Star.
And action.
Starring Heath Ledger, Marilyn Monroe, Chadwick Boseman, Robin Williams, Carrie Fisher, and Bruce Lee. Search for Death of a Film Star in your podcast app. You've seen them tell stories. Now it's time to tell theirs.